The Money Show. Personal Finance.
Warren Ingram with Personal Finance this evening. He's an executive director at Galileo Capital. He is also a financial advisor. And a couple of questions this evening, Warren Ingram, from listeners who are worried. And understandably, people are worried because there's an awful lot to be worried about. Agreed? Can we start on that point? Do we agree that there's an awful lot to worry about?
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we look at hard numbers and you know, our finance minister talks about potentially a debt to GDP of over 80%, that's on its own, that's a frightening number. So we have a lot to worry about.
And we know it's going to be higher than that, simply because National Treasury always underestimates problems and always over-exaggerates potential upside. So we know it's going to be higher than that. I don't know if it goes over 100%, but yeah, we've got big problems. We've got big problems. Now, from Shannon, who's very nice, and says, could you raise this on one of your episodes? If we invest in foreign assets via a local asset manager, so whether that be Assignia and Allan Gray and Old Mutual, whomever it might be, and South Africa experiences a foreign debt crisis in 2 years, what happens to those asset managers and their funds? And I think that's a critical question. Is it better just to move money out the country? What happens to all those funds and asset managers if the rand collapses? I suppose the important thing to point out here is that if you invest money into an asset management firm, the money is not the asset management firm's money. It is your money. Correct, Warren?
Yeah, 100%. And especially if you're using a unit trust or an exchange-traded fund as your vehicle, because the law around those is really strict. And the only people that own the assets of a unit trust or an exchange-traded fund are the investors and not the company that launched the unit trust. So you know, they get a fee to run the fund, they put their name on it and the like, but they're not even the custodians of the actual assets. You know, the law requires that for example, if it's a unit trust company managing the money, that it will then be held by a custodian, which will be a separate company completely unrelated to that unit trust company. So there's a huge separation of the assets of the fund manager themselves and then the investors who put their money into those funds.
Okay, so does it make any difference then if I choose to invest with a local asset manager? So I take my 1,000 rand and I go to an asset manager and I say, I'd like some offshore investments, please. And they say, certainly. And they invest on my behalf. Is there any difference to me doing that versus going through the process of quite legally taking money out of the country and using an asset manager in a different country to do the job?
So I think there's two things. The one that I think we need to talk about would be the category of unit trust called feeder funds, and that's got nothing to do with food. And those are funds that, although you invest in them in South Africa with rands, they are 100% then invested overseas in international markets, and you know, there are a range of different feeder funds around. And then when you decide to get your money out, the money will then get given back to you in rands. But if the rand goes from, you know, 17.50 to the dollar to, you know, 34, you know, or 35 rand to the dollar, then you're going to get a big growth in your money because you will benefit from the depreciation of the rand against the foreign exchange and then whatever those investments have done in the international markets. And so these feeder funds are really popular, especially for people that want to do monthly debit orders or smaller lump sums, you know, to use the 1,000 rand example. And those, I think that those are ones that are probably most at risk if we get a real deterioration in our financial position in the future as a country, and potentially where the government starts, you know, implementing, you know, really radical, strange, you know, policies. Because there they could say, well, no, we're going to change the way that the allocation to these feeder funds that asset managers are allowed to use, and we're going to limit the amount that asset managers can then send out on behalf of their clients. And I think that would be one where if things really went south from here, and you know, we might be slightly south at the moment, but if it gets really a lot worse, that could be a big one. if we're talking about a normal South African fund manager that's got an overseas range of unit trusts that are actually, you know, held in Luxembourg or in Ireland, and they're denominated in dollars or in pounds, and something goes wrong in South Africa and the laws change, I think it's very hard for the government here to force that money to come back, because you know, eventually that unit trust is listed. For example, let's just use Ireland as an example. It's listed in Ireland, and it would require the South African authorities to go to the Irish authorities and convince them to force that money to come back to South Africa. And I don't think that happens. You know, they could put pressure on the unit trust company here, but the point is that those are funds that are sitting in another country, regulated by another regulator. And I think that the possibility of actually doing that is very small. The other alternative would be that the government puts pressure on us as individuals and says, you know, we're now closing exchange controls and reversing exchange controls, and you need to bring all your money back into South Africa. I guess, again, it's in the realm of a possibility, but I think it's highly unlikely. I mean, I think, you know, that for me is not a big issue. So I think if you really want to protect yourself against, you know, a future that, you know, that's many times worse, for example, in terms of policy decisions than Zuma firing Nene, then maybe actually convert your money into dollars, pounds, or euros, send it out, and I think you've got the protection that you're looking for. And if you're really skeptical about South Africa, then maybe choose a fund manager or a platform that has no South African link at all. But I don't think that's always a complete necessity.
Okay, thank you. I think I think you've answered Shannon's question. And the question is, and there is no answer to the question I think that Shannon wants, is it better just to move the money out of the country? It might be, is the answer.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, if I look at that, the guiding principle would be, you know, if you want to do, a debit order on a monthly basis, or you're going to be moving amounts of, let's say, you know, 30 or 40,000 rand or 50,000 rand, I think that it's quite expensive to convert your rands into foreign exchange, because, you know, obviously the banks charge well, you know, charge good fees to convert rands into foreign exchange. And so bigger amounts, it makes more and more sense to convert the money. You get the cost benefit. But for smaller amounts, I think feeder funds are good and effective in terms of giving you the nice diversification. And if the rand does collapse, you do get a big benefit there. I think a lot of people saw that at the start of this year. So to me, it would be about the size of the investment that you're wanting to make.
Okay. Then on to Charles and the most impossible question of all. Where or how best can I invest my 1 million rand cash in times like this? I am so scared if I lose my entire life savings. So there's no pressure here, Warren. but don't get this wrong.
No, don't mess it up. It's Charles's life savings. And I think that, you know, I love the question, because the fear in that second part of this question is what a lot of people are living with. You know, they've worked really hard to build up their savings, and the amount is precious to everybody, right? So whether you're investing 100,000, a million, or, you know, 100 million, it doesn't matter. You know, it's your capital and it's your life savings. And so, to me, I always think when I don't know what's going on in the world, and that's probably most days and most months, I guess, then I always try and spread my risks, you know, and spread out my investment decisions as far and as wide as I possibly can. And so I guess the two ways that I would do that in this situation is, one, if Charles is going to live in South Africa, if that's his plan, then I think having a 50-50 split between South African investments and international investments makes sense to me. So you know, again, when you don't know what's going to happen in the future, at least spread out, you know, your investments from South Africa and overseas. And you know, we've just spoken about different amounts, and I think you know if he's investing 500,000 in South Africa and 500,000 overseas, he can definitely actually convert his rands to dollars or pounds or euros. My view is, don't be too clever. Dollars is fine. But I'd wait. I'd wait until at least the rand, you know, back to about 17 rand to the dollar. And I do think it will get back there at some point. I don't know when. And then, you know, don't be too clever with that overseas investment. Just, you know, spread it across the world. You know, you get a, you know, global unit trusts or world. They're usually called the World Exchange Traded Fund. So, you know, like a Satrix does it, Vanguard do it. You know, iShares do it, where you just buy the world. the MSCI World Index.
I was wondering if you were going to go there, because I was just reading up this week on just the huge bias that the MSCI World Index now has toward the S&P 500, and the huge bias that the S&P 500 has toward the FANGs stocks, because the Facebooks and Amazons of the world have got so big and so powerful and so pricey that they make up a disproportionate amount of suddenly the MSCI World Index, which is dramatically American suddenly. It's, you might as well just go and buy the S&P 500 almost.
Well, you know, let's say that the U.S. shares make up 60% of the world index at the moment, which is disproportionately higher than normal. It's usually around about 50%. You're still getting good global diversification there. And you know, the thing about an index is, I mean, we've spoken about indices for years on the show, and one of the things is, you know, in the past it was, just to use a South African example, it was Anglos and Billiton that were like a huge part of the South African index and were totally overweight in resources, and it was a huge problem. And then all of a sudden, they weren't such a problem because, you know, this little thing called Naspers came along and, it overtook. And I'm sure there'll be another story. And it'll be the same with the World Index. There are always countries and sectors that are dominating for a particular time, and then they fall out the rankings and something else takes their place. I am worried about it, the valuations at the moment. But the second part of my answer to that question will be, don't take your $500,000 and convert it to dollars and invest it all at once into the world index. Try and do it over 6 months, because then you spread out this risk of buying, something that's too expensive. And at the moment you buy something over 6 months, the likelihood of losing a heck of a lot of money is quite small, because you're either buying as the crash is happening or you're buying as it's recovering, and you limit your potential losses. So to me, that would be the answer to that question. And especially, some of these businesses like Apple, it is expensive, but it's a hugely profitable business, sits on an enormous amount of cash, and has a global market. So the fact that it happens to be listed in America, you're not really just taking a view on the U.S. economy or just on one sector. You're taking a view on really a worldwide economy going into recovery, hopefully, one day after this COVID thing, washes through the system.
Hopefully it doesn't wash through our systems. Warren Ingram, thank you. Personal financial advisor, executive director at Galileo Capital.